in its highest sense, education and life are one. Is that what it said? And the work of education, to restore in man the image of his Creator, to bring him back to the perfection in which he was created, to promote the development of body, mind, and soul, that the divine purpose in his creation might be realized. This is the object of education. This is the great object of life. Have you all found that your thought processes, your pictures you're getting in your mind are changing any when you think about education? You know, it's amazing what happens to people when they decide they're going to do what God says and carry out His program. Have you found that the things you read have an entirely different thought pattern in them? If we're studying something just because we want to study it and we're not planning to do anything about it, it doesn't really make any impression on it. It's when we start to do something about it that something really happens. I hope we're all studying from a backdrop of realizing that we're in for the greatest changes in the shortest period of time this world's ever seen. Do we all understand that? Everything is going to change rapidly one of these days. It's going to change suddenly. It's going to change unexpectedly. One day it says we'll have solid ground under our feet. The next day we'll have nothing to stand on. And we should be studying this thing with all these things with an understanding of a preparation for what is coming. Now, this isn't a class in closing events, but it could well be. Because God has told us all of these things. And the things that we need to know now and need to do now may not seem so important now. But they are going to be important if God said to do it. Much more important than we realize. Well, let's recognize that from man's creation, his whole body was built for action. His whole process of life is based on motion, action, exercise that's necessary to carry on a healthy function. You see, we have billions and billions of miles of little blood vessels. We have a heart to pump the blood out through the arteries, into the arterioles, into the capillaries, and then it reverses and has to come back, and there's nothing to pump it back. But all of the large veins are located very close or under large muscles, in close proximity to them. And every time you use a muscle, this muscle shortens, contracts in length, and gets larger. And it acts as a pump. And our veins all have valves in them so that the blood can only run one direction. And the only way that we can ever get the blood back to our hearts the way it should be is if we have exercise to help get it back. No way of getting it back except through the action of the muscles. This is why it's real hard for people to get well when they're in bed. You know, you don't get any strength to get up and begin to get some exercise. And this is one thing that we'll learn from the study of anatomy, physiology, that a human being, and every being as far as that's concerned, every animal, is made for movement and action. Now, this is just from a physical standpoint. But man was also made for action because it's through action that he gains his enjoyment, his happiness. Man was made to do something. And whenever the time has come when man had nothing to do, something very drastic and very serious happened to him. When you think of The wickedest place and the wickedest thing you know of in history of the world, most people think of what? When you think of just wickedness, what do you think of? So I think of what? Sodom and Gomorrah, that's right. Do you think of Sodom and Gomorrah? This was a wicked place. Do you know what made Sodom and Gomorrah so wicked? Yes, you're right. The 16th chapter of Ezekiel, 49th verse. Behold, this was the iniquity of thy sister Sodom, pride, fullness of bread, and abundance of idleness. What was Sodom's sin? Pride, fullness of bread, and what? Abundance of idleness. That's the 16th chapter of Ezekiel and the 49th verse. And this was the problem they had. And listen, this same condition will always bring about the same situation. This is what we can expect. Pride, fullness of bread, and abundance of idleness. God made us to be busy. He made us to have activity. He made us for motion. Well, we discussed the lessons, God's lesson books, and then today we said we were going to study practical education. Useful work, which is the first of all the lesson books. It's the one that we're to learn first. It's the one that we're to spend the most time with. It's the one that's most effective in our lives. You know, it seems strange that we should have to work. From a certain standpoint, I was just thinking the other day, you know, everything that we do in this life, everything we make, everything we enter into in labor will eventually, what will happen to it? Well, what will happen to everything in this world? It'll be destroyed. Here's a chapel, beautiful chapel. You know what will happen to this chapel some of these days? It'll just be rubble. We're doing work. We're doing maintenance work. We're doing all kinds of things around here. I build a lot of houses. I build a lot of cabinets. I've done a lot of work. But you know what's going to happen to all that work? It's going to all be gone. Well, why should I do it then? But I want us to get this. Don't ever forget it. Everything that every human being has ever made is going to be destroyed. But what happened to you while you were doing it, you'll have forever. The things that are going to last are not what you do. It's what happens to you while you're doing it that's going to last. Do you get that? It's the way you did it that's going to always be in the nerves and fibers of your being. And so the important thing when we're doing this useful work is that we get out of it the lessons God has for us. You know, some people never have the enjoyment of being satisfied that they have done a good job. They've done something worthwhile. When God was finished making this earth, He looked at it and He was happy. He was completely satisfied because He had done what? He had done a perfect job. He rejoiced that everything was perfect. And let me tell you, one of the greatest satisfactions in life is to accomplish something. No, we've done a good work. But I want to tell you this, that you and I can do nothing without the help of God. By the way, we had a statement we were going to look up. Did anybody find it? I know one person found it. They brought it to me. And if you know where what that statement was, how many of you remember what we were discussing? What was it?
thought it was a ministry of healing.
Huh?
But I remember it was a ministry of healing.
We made the statement that everything in our lives is the result of what? Of an ever-active, ever-present God. Everything we do, every move we make, is a result of God's power in our lives. And this statement is on the same page of a statement that I've quoted many times and you've heard many times. Above the distractions of earth, God sits enthroned. It's on that same page. It's the top of the page. I want you to notice what it says. It says, the mechanism of the human body can... 417, Ministry of Healing. The mechanism of the human body cannot be fully understood. It represents mysteries that baffle the most intelligent. It is not the result of a mechanism which, once set in motion, continues its work, that the pulse beats and breath follows breath. In God we live and move and have our being. The beating heart, the throbbing pulse, every nerve and muscle in the living organism is kept in order and activity by the power of an ever-present God. Many people say, well, I just wonder if God has left me. No, He hasn't left you. You know how I know He hasn't left you? Well, you're still alive. If God really left us, what would happen to us? We just go back to dust. He's with us. He's acting through us. He's working through us. He is working through every activity of our lives. Well, I hope you folks bring with you your book Education. We're going to use it quite a bit. And there's a chapter in here that I want to study a little bit with you today. It's called Manual Training. It starts on page 214. Education, page 214. At the creation, labor was appointed as a blessing. It meant development, power, and happiness. The first statement of this book, Education, it says that our ideas of education take too low and too narrow a range. It has more to do with more than just this life, but it has to do with all of the life possible to man. And then it says it's the harmonious development of the what? Physical, mental, spiritual powers. It's development, and it's the harmonious development of the physical, mental, and spiritual powers. The changed condition of the earth through the curse of sin has brought a change in the conditions of labor. Yet though now attended with anxiety, weariness, and pain, it is still a source of happiness and development. It is a safeguard against temptation. Its discipline places a check on self-indulgence and promotes industry, purity, and firmness. Thus it becomes a part of God's great plan for our recovery from the fall. What does? Right? Labor is a part of God's plan for what? For the recovery from the fall. Do you know why most people work? What's that? Most people work so they can make some money so they can live and do the things they want to do. You know, this earth is a queer place. It's different from any place else in the universe. Did you know that this little planet of ours is the only place in the universe where people buy or sell? Did you know that? I remember several years ago I was traveling up in Ohio, and I came to Canton, Ohio. I'd spent several years there, and I was looking for a place. I was all twisted up. The interstate had changed things around, and I came around the corner, and here was a great big church. I think maybe I told you this. I don't know. But anyway, this was the first church I've ever seen with a big marquee, just like a theater. It had a great big marquee across the front. And in big letters, it said, God has nothing to sell. Did you know that before this earth finishes its history, that God's people are going to have their final examination as to whether they're going to have a part in the finishing of God's work? Do you know what that examination is? It's to see if we can live on this earth without buying and selling. If all we're working for is to make money, there won't be anything to do after that. Before that time, we had better come to the place where our work is for something more than just selfish, good, temporal interest. God never intended that man should work for selfish reasons. You see, there's only one reason why people in this world buy or sell. Now you say, what does that have to do with labor? It has a lot to do with labor, because most labor is forced labor. And the reason that people buy and sell here is because everybody's so selfish, they're afraid somebody's going to cheat them out of something. And so we demand something for everything we do. But you see, it isn't like that in God's plan of life. You see, if I am selfish and I'm working for myself, you know how many I have working for me? Myself, that's all. But if I'm unselfish and everybody else were unselfish, how many people would be working for me? Well, everybody would be working for me. That's right. I'd be working for everybody else. And before we come to the end of this life, we're going to have to learn that the real joy of labor is to labor because we can do something for someone, and not because we're going to get something for it. It says of Jesus' life, from his earliest years, he was possessed of a one purpose. He what? He lived to bless others. And I want us all to think right now that as we talk about practical labor, as we talk about useful work, we're not doing it because we're going to get so efficient so we can make lots of money. That's not the purpose of it. We're going to come to the place where we are doing work because the more useful we are, the more we can accomplish in good. And you know, I found so many interesting ways of helping people, so many ways of doing something for people, because you can do something for them that helps them, and then they're interested in something else we have to give them. Maybe I told you the story. I don't know if I did or not, but anyway, I don't mind telling again, because nobody ever remembers what you say very much anyway. So if I say it twice, well, that won't make much difference. I was out doing visitation from door to door out when I lived in Michigan, and I came to a house and I went in and I began to talk to the woman. I came there to give her something to read or to talk to her and help her spiritually, and I was trying to get around to it, and she stopped me right in the middle of it, and she says, "Mister, I'm not interested in what you have to say." She says, "My refrigerator isn't working, the milk's sour, and I don't have anything to feed the baby." Well, she wasn't interested. She had a problem. And I said, "Well, what's the matter with your refrigerator?" She said, "Well, somebody came out here to see about fixing it, and they said I had to put a new unit in it, and I've forgotten how it was, maybe $100 or something like that, and they were poor people," and she said, "What am I going to do?" Well, I said, "Maybe I could do something to help you with your refrigerator." She said, "Well, can you have fixed refrigerators?" I said, "Well, I don't know. I might be able to." So I proceeded to check her refrigerator out, and she, I don't remember exactly what it was. I think she had a hole in the evaporator. You know, a lot of people want to help the old-fashioned refrigerators. They want to help them defrost by sticking an ice pick in them, you know. And a lot of times they let the gas out of them. And so I don't know. I don't remember exactly what I did. I just remember the experience. But anyway, I took a little while, and I fixed the refrigerator and got it working. And after that, I went back to visit and some of the other folks, and you know, we had some real good contact. Now, I don't know that all of you are going to be refrigeration experts. I think every man should be able to fix refrigerators. real simple. But there are a lot of things women can do. But folks, people are not interested in hearing what we have to say in any spiritual way as long as they have problems that are bothering them. And the most wonderful thing about practical work, there's so many ways you can help people if you can do practical things. This is why God made practical labor the first prerequisite. Because of what it does to us and what it does to everyone else. Because it helps us to develop. And remember this, that this is the greatest agency. I want you to get this. This is the greatest agency there is in character development. Is practical, useful work. Because it gives stability of character. Practical work has the same relationship to our character that our spine does to our body. It gives stability to it. And this is why it's the first in the list on useful work. First of the books. Children should start out learning to work, because when they work, they're not doing it to get paid, they're doing it for what purpose? Well, to keep busy and to realize that they're in this world to do some service. Children should be taught to work before they ever start to school. And then it should be continued right in there into their educational program. You see, when I was growing up, they used to tell me about all the subjects I was taking that I took them simply for mental development. Well, I never could see how they were developing me very much mentally. And there were a lot of things I didn't know then that I know now. And they told me how much this made me think. Well, actually, I don't know whether it ever made me think or not. I wasn't conscious of it did, but there are some things that make you think. And the thing that makes people think more than anything else is useful work. It makes logical thinkers. It makes us reason from cause to effect. Because, you see, nobody has to read the answer book to me. If I have a problem in anything, I don't care what it is, if I'm doing building, if you're baking bread, if you're cooking something, anything you're doing, you don't have to have an answer book, folks, to find out whether it's right or not. Before you get through, you're going to know whether it was right. How? By the results, that's right. If I'm building a house, nobody has to tell me whether I'm doing a good job or not. If I'm laying a floor, nobody has to tell me whether I'm doing a good job putting the boards together. If I'm putting a roof on, nobody has to tell me whether I made a mistake or not. Because the first time it rains, I'm going to find out. If I'm repairing a car, nobody has to tell me whether I've done a good job or not. You know why? See, anything you do in the practical line, you are going to know immediately whether you were reasoning right or not, whether you're thinking right or not. Because the result is right there in front of you. And this is the reason why the Lord has given us practical labor as a useful part of our education. It gives us, well, let's see what the book says here. In this chapter, on page 220, the benefit of manual training is needed also by professional men. By what? A man may have a brilliant mind, he may be quick to catch ideas, his knowledge and skill may secure for him admission to his chosen calling, yet he may still be far from possessing a fitness for its duties. An education derived chiefly from books leads to superficial thinking. To what? Practical work encourages close observation and independent thought. Rightly performed, it tends to develop that practical wisdom which we call common sense. Then how do we get common sense? By practical labor. Now, what is common sense anyway? What's that? Yes. Anybody else have a definition? I have my definition. Mine won't fit you. I mean, you won't have the same one I do. All right, what do you have on you?
It's a workable, practical method of thinking for handling emergencies, gained through experience.
Well, you only use an emergency?
Every day.
That's what keeps you from having emergencies. Yes. What's that? Well, to me, common sense is just the ability to do the right thing at the right time. No matter what situation you're in, you find, you know what? Did you ever notice that some people seem to have answers and other people don't? It's common sense. People with common sense can do things they've never done before because they are able to apply what they've done under other circumstances to these circumstances. And it comes from what? From practical duties. Yes. Now, it develops the ability to plan and execute. To do what? Strengthens courage and perseverance. And calls for the exercise of tact and skill. I got a letter not long ago, and I thought it was very interesting. It said, wisdom is knowing what needs to be done. Skill is knowing how to do it. And virtue is doing it. I thought that was pretty good. Wisdom knows what needs to be done. Skill knows how to do it, and virtue is doing it. There are a lot of people who know how to do things that just don't do them. And it isn't very much value to know what to do unless we do it, is it? All right? I hope all of you will read this chapter on manual training in the book Education. On page 218, it says, manual training is deserving of far more attention than it has received. Schools should be established that, in addition to the highest mental and moral culture, shall provide the best possible facilities for physical development and industrial training. Instruction should be given in agriculture, manufactures, covering as many as possible of the useful trades, also in household economy, healthful cookery, sewing, hygienic dressmaking, the treatment of the sick, and kindred lines. Gardens, workshops, and treatment rooms should be provided, and the work in every line should be under the direction of skilled instructors. The work should have a definite aim and should be thorough. Now, I don't know any place in the world that you have an opportunity to learn as many things as quickly as you do in a place like this, but I want you to know this, that the burden is on you to learn it and not on someone to teach you. We can learn as many things as we want to and under any circumstances if we just want to. Bezalel was to be the architect. This man belonged to the tribe of Judah, a tribe that God delighted to honor. Now here's another comment. In ancient times, the Lord instructed Moses to build him a sanctuary. The people were to provide the material, and skillful men must be found to handle the precious material. Among the multitude were Egyptians who had acted as overseers for such work and thoroughly understood how it should be done. Now, who was in the group that came out of Egypt? Egyptian overseers that knew how to do this. But they were Egyptians, and they belonged to that mixed multitude that were always complaining. They really never joined Israel, you know. And they knew how to do it. But the work was not dependent on them. The Lord united with human agencies, giving them wisdom to work skillfully. Now, here were two men who knew how to make brick. They knew how to do, they knew how to help make the pyramids. They knew how to do things that they learned to do when they were in bondage in Egypt. But they never had anything to do with gold and silver and this special workmanship that had to comprise the work of the sanctuary. But what did the Lord do? He imparted to them skill so they could do this instantaneously. And they not only were able to do the work, but it was so ingrained into them that their children inherited the skills. Now I want you to notice what it says. Let the workmen in the service of God today pray to Him for wisdom and keen foresight that they may do their work perfectly. Did you ever have a job to do that you didn't know how to do it? Were you ever in a place where you just couldn't do it? There was no way you could find out anything to do it? Well, I believe the Lord is willing to give us wisdom to do that. I don't think there's... Now, you understand, if we're negligent and careless and we don't do the best we can, but if we really set our hearts to do God's will and we want practical skills, and folks, practical skills are going to be more necessary in the days that are ahead than they've ever been before. I read to the folks, to the group, I think I read to you this testimony about what was going to happen soon. We need to recognize that the conditions we're in now are not going to last forever. We're going to be under very difficult circumstances. And if it were not important for us to know these things, God wouldn't tell us. We're going to have to do things like Daniel did in Babylon and Joseph did in Egypt. God is going to call people to do things. These statements that I read last night, I'll share them with you because I think they're very, very interesting statements, very important. One of them is in a testimony to Mountain View regarding the work in Mountain View, and was of September 10, 1906. It says, because we are now settled here, that was Mountain View, we seem to think that we shall never be moved. But there will come a time when there will be a great scattering, a scattering that we do not now dream of. And it will be brought about in unexpected ways. Some of you will be taken away to remote regions, but God will have a work for you there. Do you think that under the conditions that are ahead, that if we can do things to help people, practical things, that it will give us favor with the people that we won't have any other way? And let's remember that this is a part of our spiritual training as well as what we call spiritual. There is nothing in education that isn't spiritual, is that right? Should useful work be a spiritual function? And I could tell you story after story here today about when the Lord helped me to do things I didn't know how to do. I remember particularly one time I was working on a commercial washing machine. I had torn it down and I was changing it over so that it was a combination extractor and washer, and it didn't work, and so I was making a washer out of it, and I did something I don't usually do. I took the wires off the motor, and I didn't identify them. I didn't put markers on them where they came from, and I learned a lesson there, and I've never done that since. When I take wires off, I put a tag on them so I know where they go. And there were 8 wires going to this motor, and it was a reversing multiple speed motor. Now, just an ordinary motor is hard enough to wire. And so I thought, well, I'll remember where these are. And I took them off, and in a little while I had 8 wires, and was I confused. And I didn't know where anything went. I had no schematic for it. The machine was made in Dallas, Texas, and I was in Michigan. And I don't know, and the machine was probably 20 years old. I don't know if there was even a schematic for it. And I worked on it for, I don't know how long, half a day, I guess. And I never could get it hooked up, so it worked. Because it was complicated, reversing variable speed motor. It was, you have to hook them up just right. And I just came to the end. I should have done it a long time before. I said, well, we need this. We're doing the Lord's work. And so I just got down there. I said, Lord, I don't know what to do. I don't have a schematic for this. I don't know how to fix it. I don't know what to do. I need help. And I got up, and you know, something said to me, you take that wire and you put it right there. You take this one, you put there. And this one you put there. I only took 3 wires. The rest of them I didn't need. Because I'd taken off part of the mechanism, you see. And I turned it on and it worked perfect. I know, I over and over again, the Lord has helped me to do things. I waked up in the morning and I had a problem. Did you know that practical problems are just as important sometimes as what we call spiritual problems? They have to be taken care of. They have to be done. Much is involved in it. And while when we're doing these things and learning how to do them, it says, if anyone lack wisdom, let him what? Ask of God. And I want you to know that I believe that all of us are going to have to learn practical skills in a greatly accelerated pace in the days that are ahead. I really believe that. And do you think it would be a blessing to us spiritually if we could just claim God's blessing in a practical way? These are things we can see. Remember what this said. I want to read this again. And then I'll read this other statement because that's important. This statement that I just read from Exodus said this. I want to read the last part of that. That's really important. I gave you the page on it. It's on chapter 31 of Exodus. Let the workman in the service of God today pray for wisdom and keen foresight. And what? Keen foresight. That they may do their work perfectly. Do it how? God doesn't want us to do sloppy, careless work. He wants us to do it how? Remember this. Don't ever forget it. Your work, all the work that you're doing is going to be all done away with. But the way you did it is going to be with you forever. If we thought about that, would it make a difference in how we did work? When Jesus was here, what kind of work did He do? And how much of Jesus' time on earth did He spend in practical work? The first 30 years of His life. Unbelievable. The Son of God came to this world, and the first 30 years of His life, He was demonstrating perfect workmanship. But during all that time, what was He doing? He was developing a perfect character for us. Did you know Jesus came to this earth just to develop a character for us? Not for Himself. He had a character. He didn't need it. He was God. He came to this earth for the specific purpose of developing a character that He could give to us. So He had to go through everything that every human being will ever have to go through so He can help us in every emergency that we ever have to go through. That's why He had to go through all the things He went through. And He developed a skill for every one of us. If we ask Him, He'll help us. And what I want to really impress upon us is the simple fact, folks, that we don't have as much time as we've had. And what we do, we had better be about our business. And the Lord is going to see that we have time to do the things we need to do if we're diligent and earnest, and if we seek Him first. Jesus said, seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and then what? All these things will be added unto you. Now, the other statement I was going to read, this was in Loma Linda Messages, page 295, the unabridged edition. The time will come when God's people will have to move away from the cities and live in small companies by themselves. Now, the reason that my wife and I are here now is because we have a burden to help people and help train parents train their children, and I have a burden to help people become practical as well as spiritual. They're all together. And we intended to go out and help people that wanted to get out of the cities. There are thousands and thousands of people that are going to have to get out of the cities. And folks, we're not learning practical things just for us. Did you know there are a lot of people that don't know what we know now and haven't studied what we're studying? Do you understand that? And the things that we're learning to help other people who don't have these skills. This is what God is calling us for. Those who have something that they can share with someone else. And that doesn't mean we're just going out here and work for ourselves. There are thousands of families that are going to have to move out of the cities, and somebody's going to have to help them some way. They can't all come to institutions. They're going to have to go different places. And I believe that God has it planned so that there are going to be people that will move in with these people and help them in whatever their needs. I'm glad that God has made arrangements for everything, haven't you? Aren't you? Well, do you see what our responsibility is? Some of us who learn true education and learn these practical skills may be able to help hundreds of families in the days that are ahead. And so it's important that we understand these things. Well, this goes on to say, if our people regard God's instructions as of value, they will move out of the cities so that they will not be corrupted by its revolting sights, and so that their children will not be corrupted by its vices. Those who choose to remain in the cities must share the disasters that will come upon them. Yeah. That's page 295 of the unabridged Loma Linda Messages. We just came back from California, and while we were there, they were trying to get a law exempting Adventists from the labor laws. They have passed two laws this year in California, and in neither of them did they exempt anyone for have exemptions for conscientious objectors. And let me tell you, very, very soon, we're going to have to move out. All Adventists are going to have to move out of the cities to save themselves. And do you think that we can sit comfortably and unconsciously and say, well, that's their problem? You see, if Jesus couldn't remain in heaven while we were lost, did you ever read that statement? It's in the book Ministry of Healing. It's a very beautiful statement. Let's see if I can find it. All right, yeah, it's page 105. Jesus did not consider heaven a place to be desired while we were lost. Does that challenge you? He left the heavenly courts for a life of reproach and insult and death and shame. He, who was rich in heaven's priceless treasure, became poor that through His poverty we might be rich. We are to follow in the path He trod. He who becomes a child of God should henceforth look upon himself as a link in the chain let down to save the world. A what? Did you ever hear anything about a chain? Oh. A chain is as strong as what? Its weakest link. Is that right or isn't it? And if you and I are a link in the chain that's put out to save humanity, Is it important that our link be strong? You see, I'm not interested in just telling you folks get out and do a lot of work so you can learn to be skillful. Yes, it's important to be skillful. But the reason for it, this is what I'm interested in. That's what you're interested in. Why are we doing all this? Because we're not here just to save ourselves. We're here to help people. And while we're an institution, our business is to help to make this institution successful in every way possible. And when the Lord calls us somewhere else, our business is to help people who need help. It doesn't take people very long today if they want to live simply to make a living. My daughter and my son-in-law and I made a trip west. We were gone 3 months. And out of this time, we worked 2.5 weeks. And we made enough to pay our expenses on the trip. Now that was, we worked, and we were paid for this work. We did a lot of other work we didn't get paid for, and we were able to help a lot of people that couldn't do anything. We just visited last night a family that lives in this community, just a little ways from here. There's two women, a mother and a daughter, and a son that's been had brain damage. He's not normal. They have a girl and two little children. Those women are remodeling a house, and I wish you'd looked at it. I tell you, they're doing a better job than a lot of men would do. I was amazed. But they don't know how to do some of the work, and they've been praying for somebody to come and help them do some work. And so I'm going to take a crew down there as soon as my saw part gets back and help them hang a couple sliding glass doors. And while we were on this trip, we came by a little institution out in Missouri, Mountain Grove, Missouri, a place called Meadowbrook. And we didn't know why we got there just at that time, but this group had been praying for somebody to help make the trusses so they could put their industrial arts building up. Well, when I came, they looked and said, "Well, how did you happen to be here?" I said, "Well, we just came." And so they told me what had happened. So I helped them make their trusses so they can put their building up. You know, it's not only important to have our prayers answered, it's important that the Lord can help us to answer somebody else's prayers. Jesus considered heaven not a place to be desired while what? Now we were lost. Folks, we're not going to want to go to heaven as long as there are a lot of other people that aren't ready, are we? Well, if Jesus didn't want to stay up there while we were lost, is there any reason why we should want to go there while other people are lost? If we do, there's something wrong with our religion, isn't it? Now, are we getting through to you why it's important that we learn all these things and that we can learn them quickly and what the purpose is? Because when we do the final work, remember, now, I'm not sure when this is coming, but I'm reasonably sure that the great final message is going to go after we can't buy ourselves. And so all the work we'll do then will be for service. But the more we know how to do, the more we're able to help people. I find every skill I have, I can help somebody that I couldn't help in any other way. He who becomes a child of God should henceforth look upon himself as a what? As a link in the chain let down to save the world, one with Christ in his plan of mercy, going forth with him to seek and to save that which is lost. There's another statement that I want to read. Our time is about gone, and I think you'll be interested in this. I have a lot of quotations here on practical education, but there was one I was just looking at that was particularly interesting to me. What? Desire of Ages, page 72. The parents of Jesus were poor and depended upon their daily toil. He was familiar with poverty, self-denial, and privation. This experience was a safeguard to him. In his industrious life, there were no idle moments to invite temptation. What did Jesus not have? No aimless hours opened the way for corrupt associations. No what? Aimless hours. So far as possible, he closed the door to the tempter. Neither gain nor pleasure, applause nor censure could induce him to consent to one wrong act. He was wise to discern evil and strong to resist it. Jesus lived in a peasant's home and faithfully and cheerfully acted his part in the burdens of the household. He had been the commander of heaven, and angels had delighted to fulfill his word. Now he was a willing servant, a loving, obedient son. He learned a trade, and with his own hands worked in the carpenter shop with Joseph. In the simple garb of a common laborer, he walked the streets of the little town, going to and returning from his humble work. He did not employ his divine power to lessen his burdens or to lighten his toil. As Jesus worked in childhood and youth, mind and body were developed. He did not use his physical powers recklessly, but in such a way as to keep them in health, that he might do the best work in every line. He was perfect as a workman as he was perfect in character. By his own example, he taught that it is our duty to be industrious and that our work should be performed with exactness and thoroughness, that such labor is honorable. The exercise that teaches the hands to be useful and trains the young to bear their share of life's burdens gives physical strength and develops every faculty. All should find something to do that will be beneficial to themselves and helpful to others. God appointed work as a blessing, and only the diligent worker finds the true glory and joy of life. Who? Only the diligent worker. The approval of God rests with loving assurance upon children and youth who cheerfully take their part in the duties of the household, sharing the burdens of father and mother. Such children will go out from the home to be useful members of society. Throughout his life on earth, Jesus was an earnest and constant worker. He expected much, therefore he attempted much. He did what? Says a lot of people are afraid to start anything, to do anything for fear of failure. Aren't you glad that Jesus developed a perfect practical character for us as well as a spiritual character? Do you think he's really willing to give us skill? Then we ought to ask him, Henry. You see, character is built through action. I read that statement. That's from Mount of Blessing. Character is built through action. Our body is our problem. This is the thing we have to fight all the time. But Jesus kept his body in perfect control. Paul says, I keep my body under. And he says to the Apostle Paul that every day his inclination was in conflict with his duty. And if you have that problem, and if you ever know you ought to do something but you don't want to do it, aren't you glad that he's able to give us not only skill to do it, but he'll give us the desire and the willingness to do it. Remember, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above. Volume 7 of the commentary, page 912, 7 BC, 912, is this statement. And it's talking particularly about what happened, what we're facing today. The apostle, this is talking about the apostle Paul, the apostle in his day considered idleness a sin. And those who indulge this evil today disgrace their profession. The custom of supporting men and women in idleness by private gifts or church money encourages them in sinful habits, and this course should be conscientiously avoided. What's that? Well, it means that we should, it would be much better for us to go out expecting to do what? Work. Now, there are times it says that the labor is worthy of his hire. But there is a danger that we will use money that's consecrated to God to waste our time. Isn't there a danger of that? Well, anyway, notice what this says on farther. Every man, woman, and child should be educated to do a practical work, do a useful work. All should learn some trade. It may be tent making, or it may be business in other lines, but all should be educated to use the members of their body to some purpose, and God is ready and willing to increase the adaptability of all who will educate themselves to industrious habits. What has God pledged himself to do? He's pledged himself. He is ready and willing to increase the adaptability. The what? Now, that's another name for what? Common sense. Sure. Adaptability. He is willing to give us adaptability. And you know, in the school, you know what I hear the teacher saying all the time? They're saying to me, and I say too, well, I've never been in this situation before. I've never been in a school just like this before. But the Lord is, if He calls us to it, He's promised to give us what? Adaptability. We need to realize we need to go to the Lord. Now, other people can help us. Other people can help us with skills. Some people can help us to do things. But remember, the responsibility is ours, and we should be going to the Lord for skill and understanding. And He's going to greatly accelerate the work as we enter the closing stages. And I'm glad that He has made every provision for us to be like Him if we do not frustrate His will. If we do not frustrate His grace by a perverted will. He's made all provisions. Our next class, we're going to study the second book of nature, or the second and third, it will be the Scriptures and Nature. So if you want to do some research on it, the more you study, the more you're going to get out of it.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's Word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.